Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
The mind of plants. The idea that plants have a mind of their own has been a prominent feature of some ingenious narratives, literary works, and philosophical discourses. Recent scientific research in the field of plant cognition similarly highlights the capacity of botanical life to discern between options and learn from prior experiences, or, in other words, to think. A new book called The Mind of Plants, Narratives of Vegetal Intelligence, has been put together by Monica Gagliano, and I'm delighted that she's joining me live on the line today. Monica, good morning from us. Good evening to you.
Thank you. Good evening from Australia. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. And I believe you've had to fight your way through some pretty extreme weather conditions this morning or this evening.
That's right. I mean, this morning it looked like I was going to be flooded in, and so I wouldn't have made it to this meeting. But it looks like the weather had a bit of a break, and at the moment it's not raining. So we are here.
We have a saying in England, when it rains, it's going to be good for the garden and for the roses. So this is entirely apt. Do plants, let's start with the first question. So are we saying that plants are sentient? Are we saying that plants have intelligence and have memory?
We are saying more than that, actually. We are saying that, yes, that is, it's for sure. And not only that, but we have, as we did in this collection in the book, The Mind of Plants, we have multiple voices telling their version of these experiences. And I'm talking about scientists as well as philosophers, artists, poets, and all sorts of different disciplines across academia and beyond, like from herbalists to painters. And so, yeah, is this book in particular wants to collate together the different perspective about the subject, because so that it doesn't look like it's just a quirky thing the scientists are doing in some obscure lab somewhere, or some philosophers are, you know, talking about, but really who cares? No, it's something that has been experienced by a lot of people and in different areas of, you know, of our endeavors. So
how are we defining then intelligence, or defining the capacity to think when it comes to plants? Because presumably, and this is from a complete non-scientist, but presumably we are saying that the idea of thinking is learning from experience and adapting.
That's right. And I guess I'll maybe take it a little step back. My definition for intelligence is actually from the actual root of the word, which is interlegere, which means simply like choosing between. So it's about making choices, making decisions, and to make choices and to make the right decisions so that you as an organism, whether you're a plant, a human, or a bee, or anything else, to survive and make the right choices, you first of all, you need to be able to sense the environment, obviously. So collect the information that are available for you there to give value of different information are conveying different aspects of the environment, and some might not be relevant while others are very relevant. And then based on that, decide what are the best choices for you, which will guarantee your survivorship, but also not just survival, but reproduction, growth, flourishing. So that is what intelligence really represents and encapsulates. And another word that would represent the same is saying that there is a goal-directed behavior. So the you know, organisms like plants, but also all other organisms, are able to make this decision and direct their behavior towards a particular goal, which is, we know very well. We do it all the time when mm-hmm. we approach the fridge.
So in this collection of narratives, there's the whole, I mean, this is going to sound really facile, but there's the whole spectrum of plant life and the variety and the huge depth of plants on this planet is quite astounding. So the people who have put together their theories, their experiences, and their personal connections with particular plants had a very wide a spectrum to pick from. So we go from literally sort of small plants through to mighty trees.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, we made, as the editors, myself, John Ryan and Patricia Vieira, we made their choice easy in a way, because we didn't give them like, oh, choose amongst these species. But we asked them, you pick the plant that you have a history with, a plant that speaks to you, that maybe is something that was important in your childhood, or is something that you work with, or is something that you like eating, or, you know, we have a chapter, for example, on coffee. And of course, the person that wrote about coffee, Joe Dammit, he's obsessed with coffee. And so it was great for him to explore that relationship. But then we have other plants which are, you know, as you mentioned, like they're big trees. And we have Robbie Walkimera, who is a beautiful indigenous scholar and scientist, and she writes about that relationship with the pine, which is very important in her own personal life. So I guess the one theme is that we asked everyone, no matter what their background was, to pick the plant that would be in relation with them, and then tell us about this relationship. And so in some places, as you will see, the story is very personal, and some stories are very healing, and some of the stories are more concerned with politics and cultural issues, and also indigeneity. And so the themes are vary, because of course plants and humans, and in their interaction, they bring forth all sorts of issues, some very positive, as we know, and some not so good.
just to let you know, Monica, I cannot function without at least 3 cafe solos in the morning. So therefore, any person who writes about their relationship with the coffee plant is obviously great in my book. Just to look at that, because if you look at the relationship between humans and plants, and you mentioned indigenous people, I mean, there is a long association of an appreciation of plants in daily lives. So you go to the forest, obviously we think of forests in the Amazon, but also old style, old school, what your grandmother taught you, you know, what people growing up in a pre-industrialized society would look to nature and plants for giving all sorts of remedies, and it's something that we've lost.
That's right. I don't think we necessarily lost anything. I think it's more a matter of remembering. And these themes also is present across the essays, because many of the authors remember of experiences from their own past, their own childhood. And then some of these remembering and these memories are actually, when we read the essay, we will recognize ourselves. So in a way, there are collective memories that we are re-experiencing through the writing of one human in relation to one plant. And I think that that's really what I was very proud of our the contributors, and I was I feel very grateful that we were able to make this book.
When you talk about plants having intelligence, does that mean that plants have memory? And if plants have memory, and again, this is a complete, I'm not a scientist, but does this infer that they store this memory somewhere? Do we have plant brains, for example? Or is it something within their own DNA?
Well, plants do have memories, and this is like there is scientific research that is demonstrating this. So the question of the brain is an assumption. It's a very deep Western assumption, Western science assumption. There is actually no reason, and I repeat, there is no reason to expect that memories should be in the brain. And because if we make this assumption, then what we are saying is that if you don't have a brain, you can't have memories. But the evidence shows exactly the opposite, that you can have memories without brains. So brains are not necessary. For organisms like ourselves who do have brains, maybe that's what our brain is for. But it doesn't mean that this is the only and exclusive way to have memories. So we have confused the two, and we have put we have put the brain in front of memories instead of saying, no, memories occur, and then some organisms who have brains might use their brain to do the memory business, but other organisms who do not have brains have other systems which we might not necessarily understand or know about yet. But they definitely have other systems that allows them to collect this information and remember them for them to use them later. And memory, I should remind that, is not just like, oh, isn't it pretty that someone can remember something from the past? But memory is essential because it's part of the learning process. And if you cannot remember what happened yesterday, and every day you have to remember, you have to learn something new, which is already been presented over and over again, then you have wasting a lot of energies. And probably you wouldn't survive very long.
I mean, that sort of this. Do you think that we're going to? I mean, do you think that we are only just discovering the first part of an increasing our knowledge on the world of plants?
I think we're just remembering something that we forgot for some reason in the last few centuries, maybe because of just the way in which the Western philosophical and techno-scientific direction has been taken, which is a very colonial approach. So colonialism is not just about taking other people's land and taking other people's ideas and lives, but it's also taking over spaces for thinking. And so in a way, the Western model of the last few centuries has been a very colonial in the sense that it has taken over, and it does not allow for other ways of thinking, for other perspectives. And in that way, it's actually very anti-science. It's unscientific because science is about multiple perspectives being pondered and considered and then allowing for the evidence to show which one works best until then that gets changed again. And so it gets reevaluated constantly. So I think that we are at a time that is very exciting for science, because although maybe some of my colleagues are feeling very threatened by the idea that plants are special beings that can do things that we didn't think they could do before, but in fact is great news for science because it means that we have to revise, we have to rethink what it means to think, what it means to be intelligent, but also what it means to have a brain, because this brain and these precious neurons might be special in a way that we haven't even really appreciated. So actually serving the very purpose that those who are insisting on plants not being intelligent don't understand are missing out.
You know, we're talking about plants having brains in a form and having intelligence. And my next question then, and one that listeners will be saying is, well, in that case, do plants have the capacity for emotions, and do plants have the capacity to feel? And should I therefore be very, very concerned the next time I have to cut my grass or you know, chop a hedge down or trim my roses?
Well, first of all, I should clarify again, just in case, plants do not have brains, but the body is, both our body and a plant body is a feeling body. And we are not feeling organisms because we have a brain. We are feeling organisms because we have a body. And so anyone, any organism that has a body, which by default is any organism, it's a feeling organism. You cannot be in this place without feeling. Now, whether feeling and we associate feeling with certain emotional states, that's a different question. And we hardly know what we are, what our emotional states are, let alone the emotion of others. But as we are learning as well in our interaction and relationship with animals of other kind that are not humans, like anybody who has a dog, when anybody who has a cat, a horse. And then, you know, even recently in the UK, they just, you know, finally decided that, you know, oh, octopus is going to be listed as a sentient being. It's like, but of course, they're all sentient. They're all feeling, because sentience really is about feeling and feeling bodies. And so I think that the question of emotions and how others are feeling in relation to us, it's exactly what it's exciting about this, because it's an open field that we haven't dared exploring. And so I think it's going to be great.
And people's relationships with plants can be very, very personal. A plant can be a symbol for something. A plant can mark something hidden. It can mark a rebirth. It can mark, it can be a warning too. So again, that relationship between people and plants is a very personal one.
That's right. And that's exactly what we try to highlight in the book as well. That, you know, some of the plants that are described in the books are highly hallucinogenic, and they're famous for being that. And they have been used for forever as, you know, in the context of ceremonial and very high spiritual purposes. So now there is a revival in our culture to experience these plants as well. And sometimes in the right context, sometimes not necessarily in the right context. But the point is that In this case in particular, but it's true for all plants, the relating and the relational space between the human person and the plant person becomes very tangible. And in that sense, these experiences, which are often big experiences for the human, what they're doing is to just reminding the human person that there is a plant person there. But this is true also for the humble tomato in our garden.
I mean, if you have a special, I mean, again, I have a special relationship with anything that produces coffee, but yes, the relationship with the tomato as well. I got a WhatsApp in here from Jason. Good morning. He said, did you know that in a forest, the tree root stock are connected by tiny hairs? They share water and nutrients, and they pass them from themselves to help a weaker tree down the forest. This is an amazing fact. So we have communities of plants. We have communities.
That's right. That's right. And that's the work that a colleague of mine who has just recently also written a beautiful book last year, Susan Simard, that's her work, her contribution in Canada. But of course, this is also true in all sorts of other forests. And again, it's bringing awareness to the fact that these are people. They're just non-human people. But they're people, so they have their own sociality, they have their own friends, they have their own foes, they have their own kings. And it is in the balance of this relationship of helping each other as well as competing, because both elements are useful in nature. It's just that I think what is present in nature is a strong cooperative relationship that sometimes also has required competition. While in the human sphere, we seem to see a lot of competition, and cooperation arises only when it's really required. I think if we learn something from plants and also from nature in general, is that we can flip those two, less competition, more cooperation, and we'd have a better world.
Exactly. But unfortunately, you see, if we were plants, we would never make it. What do you hope that people that people learn from your book, The Mind of Plants?
Just being overwhelmed by the diversity, being in awe of these incredible living beings that are with us, that been with us, that were here before us, and despite our terrible behavior in cutting them down, giving them horrible soils to try and live in, they're still here with us, and without them, we don't last a second.
The book is called The Mind of Plants, Narratives on Vegetal Intelligence. It is by John C. Ryan, Patricia Vieira, and Monica Gagliano. I got that completely wrong. Monica, if people want to find you on social media or find out more about the book, where can they go?
Well, they can connect with me on Instagram or the Facebook and Twitter of the world. I also, of course, have my website, which is www.monicagagliano.com. And the book is, I think, available in most places online. So, and I understand that you also have available from your website.
Absolutely. You can download it. You can download it via our virtual bookshop. This book is called The Mind of Plants. It's a fascinating book. Go and download it from our TRA bookstore, Narratives of Vegetal Intelligence. Monica Gagliano, thank you so much for your time today, and congratulations. You must be the most determined guest, having gone through the rainstorms to get to this morning. Monica, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.